It's just about a minute and 45 seconds after 10 o'clock in the morning. And we're talking, myself and Per Foggering are talking to Joe Dillon, the co-chair of the 32-county sovereignty movement in Dublin, in all of Ireland, actually. And again, Joe, thanks for joining us this
Before
morning.
Before you go, could I please give you the website?
Oh, yeah, we're in
That's
no rush.
Right. We hadn't heard that one yet.
We're in no rush. Please give us the website.
Are you finished speaking to me now?
No, I have a couple more things if you've got
fine,
some
but
time.
I'll give it to you at the end of it then. Right.
All right, that's fine. I did want to mention that apparently Sinn Féin had a big unity conference in London not too long ago. And an old friend of our program, Radio Free Ireland, Pat Docherty, was one of the main speakers there. Does the 32-county movement have anything to say about Sinn Féin's unity conference?
Yes, it's a con job. It's a trick.
I suspected you might say so.
No, it is a trick because, you see, they are tied lock, stock and barrel to the Good Friday Agreement in relation to the issue of what they call unity.
Right, so how in the world can they even argue for Irish unity?
They can't.
Do they have a plan for undoing the signing away of Articles 2 and 3?
No, they have nothing of the sort. They're merely trying to hold back support for what's known as the Little Republicans, by pretending that they have a way forward outside of Good Friday.
Gotcha. And it sounds like the people aren't buying it. It sounds like there's more and more support for these dissident groups. Where do you expect this is going to lead in the next couple of months? There's an election coming up. Is there any dissident group that's going to be standing for election?
Well, the sovereignty movement doesn't stand for elections because the issue of sovereignty is not up for elections.
I see.
But there are, and I'm sure will be, independent Republicans and people standing like that, you know, for elections. I don't think anything has been kind of arranged yet, but I do know people will be standing.
Now, I know I can't ask you to hypothesize on the future, Joe, but it seems like the last couple of elections, Sinn Féin has been losing some ground. Do you expect that to continue?
Well, they've been losing ground in the heartland of republicanism.
Right.
And gaining it from the SDLP.
Oh.
If you follow.
Uh-huh. The Social Democratic and Labour Party, long seen as sort of a kept nationalist party.
Yes.
You know, they espouse Irish nationalism, Irish unity, they just don't do anything about it.
Well, they espouse it through Westminster. And our people voted in the declaration of the 1918 election that the union was over, the nation was independent free, and the third line on it says, no law is not enacted by Dáil Éireann or lawful on the side of Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
The other point about that is this, that, yes, that the Sinn Féin party, you see, it's hoping against hope, if you like, that they can get this policing thing to give the appearance that they have now got another foot in the door.
Right. Well, certainly they're making a big deal propaganda-wise out of the devolution of policing powers.
Well, they want to remember that it was in 1969 that the Stormont Minister for Justice directing the RUC against the nationalist people.
Mm.
Right?
Right.
And you are quite right in saying that there's a particularly in Belfast there now, there's a very much a lot of growth and development developing this year. And I believe that there is a lot of disenchantment with Gerry Adams himself.
Mm-hmm. Certainly the revelations about his brother being involved in pedophilia, and Gerry knew about it for years and did nothing, and this man was in charge of Republican youth groups and the like. Do you think that might be a harbinger of continued disenchantment with Sinn Féin? Do you think that there will be continued attacks on Gerry? And do you think perhaps the British are already setting him up for his eventual demise?
Yes, I would suspect they are.
Mm.
Because I think they think they have a far better patsy in Martin.
Well, he certainly seems to be the eager beaver these days,
yes,
with
yes.
his junkets with Ian Paisley and
yes.
video conferences with George W. Bush and the like.
Yes.
certainly he was at pains to say that that's why he was in the States, was to encourage further investment in the North. And certainly people are anxious to, like you said, to see investment in Ireland. But you have to wonder under what conditions.
Considering the state of the economy of both Britain and Ireland, you know, I mean,
exactly.
It's hard to see where this investment is going to come from.
Well, I mean, the goodwill from America towards Ireland, as you know, is there. And the Irish to them. The great tragedy has been that the real influence with the American government on Capitol Hill is the British.
Oh, of course, and it always has been.
Yes, and this is one of the things we never could break, actually, in our struggle against the British here, that they were able to keep the Americans from giving us active official support.
Right. Well, you know, Joe, that's one of the reasons I started Radio Free Ireland some 15, 16 years ago, was because most of the information we got about Ireland was filtered through the BBC.
Yes.
Which, you know, compared to American media these days, is actually quite well-rounded. But, you know, it needs to be remembered at all times that it's an instrument of the British state, and that the British state has a quote-unquote special relationship with the United States. So as a way of trying to, you know, give the whole view or, you know, another party heard from, we started Radio Free Ireland here in Portland, Oregon. And, you know, I've struggled to try to break through the stranglehold that the mainstream media seems to have on American perspectives of Ireland. So I'm very glad that you were able to join us today and give our listeners somewhat of a different perspective on how things are going right now.
And if I may say so to them, see, the whole idea of the sovereignty making the move through the UN and all was to open up to every Irish person and of Irish descent a means where they could actively support the claim to sovereignty.
Right.
That can be done. But what happened then was, and I have this directly from one of the delegation, when he went to get the visa to go back to America, he was told by the embassy in Dublin straight out that friends of theirs, meaning the British, didn't want us over there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it's important for our people and the free people of the free thinking people of the world to end this sham claim that a peace process exists in Ireland. There are men in prison today.
Right.
There are people being stopped on the streets by armed police.
Yes.
The area is under massive police action. 30 or 40 Land Rovers sitting around watching the young men, provoking them. It's all still going on.
Yes.
And, you know, it's a shame for to see that the American administration didn't go the full hog on this occasion and say, right, surely this implies a sovereignty transfer once and for all,
mm-hmm.
and end the whole thing.
Well, it sounds like it would be simple to do, but, you know, the British have really never dealt in good faith with the Irish. They have a long history of going back on their word. And, you know, this St. Patrick's Day, while everyone is celebrating the devolution of policing powers to the Stormont administration, it needs to be remembered that MI5 and 6 and the British Army are still installed on the streets in the six counties.
And she has British regiments wearing shamrock today and toasting the shamrock.
Oh, God.
See, the British...
That's painful, isn't it?
Drinking well, green
British...
tea.
The British want to encroach themselves on us.
Mm-hmm.
That's the fundamental objective of British policy in Ireland.
Sure, and it's always been about power and money, you know,
right.
Political power, control of the economics, and, you know, nothing has changed there. The only thing that's changed is the players, you know. Now it's Sinn Féin getting feted at the White House and the 32 county movement being banned from the country.
Yes,
you
based
know.
on the one thing. There's one other thing, Marla, we're working on at the moment, which will be you'll find of interest. Now, it'll be a long time being prepared, but we're moving towards lodging Holocaust charges against the British over the famine years.
Wow.
In the UN.
That's really interesting. I definitely would like to know more about that. You know, it's... I've always felt that the famine wasn't really a famine.
No, it was the Holocaust.
Yeah, well, it was proved that there was plenty of food to feed the people, but it was all owned by absentee landlords and all shipped out for profit, while the Irish people starved by the side of the road.
Well, there was a famine in Belgium, Holland, and France at the same time.
Uh-huh.
And there was no famine. There was a potato blight.
Right.
It's there on record. It's been worked on nearly 10 years at the moment. In process, but it's our intention to send a delegation to the UN and to lodge that the British engaged in Holocaust activity in Ireland between certain dates. The purpose being to weaken Ireland for the purpose of our long-term objective of suppressing her.
Right. Well, I think that's a brilliant move and not a moment too soon. It's been a long time in coming. And, you know, we can't forget these historical injustices because together they make a fabric that is understandable. You know, you need to look at the British occupation of Ireland through the lens of history to understand the full context of what's going on now.
Well, it's still going on in other parts of the world, too.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And if you look up the internet now on the British laws and acts passed against Ireland over the last 500-600 years, you can see it's just astronomical. It's unbelievable. Everything down to the size of the windows, right, to the colour of the clothes we could wear,
right,
to the religion we could hold.
And sure, we're still fighting over the language. I understand there were three different motions brought before Stormont to allow people to use their native tongue in the courts now that we're devolving the courts back to Stormont. And I understand that all three of them were brought down in defeat. That you still have to use the language of the occupier when you go to court in the six counties?
That's right. The other side of that coin is this too, Mara, I must make the mind, that the Supreme Court is still in London.
Well, that's it.
In other words, the lower courts that operate in the six counties, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you lodge an appeal to the Supreme Court, that's in London.
Oh, man, it certainly does seem like a sham to me.
It's a total sham.
I guess it was Brendan McKenney recently said that Stormont is receiving all the powers of a city council.
That's right. And by the way, never such a bunch of loyal councillors had England got.
Mm.
And that's precisely what happened. Now, it may take 50 years for us to get to the truth of how they got to where... They got the Sinn Féin leaders come down this road.
Mm-hmm.
There's many allegations and many statements and views on that. But there's one thing for certain. They went into negotiations with a prerequisite that under no circumstances could they raise the issue of partition.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah. I don't know what they thought they could get to give up something like that, you know. That's kind of the heart of the matter. If you give that up, what's the point in even having negotiations, you know?
Well, to be fair to the British, like, they've had an empire that the sun never set on, and they know an awful lot about fooling people.
Aye, that's for sure.
If you know what I mean. Like,
and sadly, it looks like this country's learned a few things at her knee.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
So, Joe, we'd definitely like to stay in touch with you and, you know, keep in touch with what's going on. And I think it's important for people over here to understand what is actually happening on the ground in Ireland. You know, a lot of people here come from Ireland, have relatives back in Ireland, you know, visit now and again every couple of years or whatever. But it's difficult to get the news about what is actually happening. And it's certainly distressing to read that there's still, you know, a British army presence on the streets. People are still being harassed. Indeed, people are still being beaten to death for the crime of being Catholic. People are still being firebombed out of their houses for the crime of being Catholic in the wrong neighbourhood, while the police service stands by and does nothing. So, you know, in terms of people's everyday lives, in the six counties at least, there's a great many people who feel that there hasn't been any significant change in their lives under occupation. So it's important that people here understand that the struggle is still going on. And it's great to have an opportunity to talk to the people who are still involved in that struggle. And I certainly want you to give folks the website and also to tell us about, has there been any organizing on this side of the pond? Is there any 32 county groups that are starting to form here in the United States.
Well, you see, whatever support we have in America, they're not formally allowed to organize under the sovereignty.
I see. So it would actually be illegal.
We are declared a terrorist organization in America.
That's ridiculous.
And the point is, as you can see, it was done solely to keep us from getting the American people to come in on the UN thing and oppose Good Friday.
Right, right. Sure, like, I can like see
this
that.
This is the thing about the internet now, the great weapon that we have.
Indeed.
That we can go up there and communicate with the Irish diaspora all over the world.
And, of course, great radio stations like KBO.
And, of course, yes, of course. I mean, the opportunity we got here today for us is immense. I mean, I hope that you were to follow my points to you at the UN, were you?
Oh, yes, indeed. Absolutely. We'll have a link here. I'm just up getting my own website at the station, and we'll certainly have a link for people to get that information. And, you know, if there's people locally that want to talk further about that, they know they can reach me at my email, which is radiofreeireland@irishnation.com.
Mm-hmm.
It's very sad that people aren't free to organize around the 32-county movement because they've been proscribed. But certainly Irish America has dealt with that in the past, and I'm sure we'll continue to find ways around that. Like I said, it wasn't that long ago that they were calling Gerry Adams a terrorist.
Oh, well, this is the thing. And, again, the fact is that they were losing the war here against the Republican Army, and they had to do something, right? And they went down this route.
Right.
We're very pleased with the Irish-American interest, and particularly stations like your own, who I'm sure have your own local listenership and all there, have you? You'd have your Irish organisations listed in all there, wouldn't you?
Sure, we do. We have a large Irish American population here in Oregon. I think it's because it's nice and wet here, rainy climate. But we're also very fortunate to have KBOO in that it's a listener sponsored community radio station. We don't take any corporate money.
Right.
So, you know, in the many, many years I've been doing this show, I've never been told what I can and can't say. And it's one of the places that the larger, you know, human rights community can turn for what they know is straight information, honest information about what goes on in Ireland. And we've made many connections to other human rights groups in Haiti and Palestine, all over the world, because, you know, certainly it's all the same thing. It's the same tactics they use. In fact, in Palestine, you may know that the Israeli Defense Forces use a book called Counterinsurgency and Low-Intensity Warfare that was written by Brigadier Frank Kitson.
That's right, yes.
Who you may know, of course.
Oh, I know, yes.
Right,
yes.
Head of the British Army in Northern Ireland back in the 70s. A very infamous man in his own right. So, you know, all these struggles are connected. The same divide-and-conquer tactics come up all over the world, and it's so important to get this kind of information out so that people can understand the context and that people can put their support behind the right groups and the people who are still fighting for human rights in occupied Northern Ireland.
Right, but we have a very active website up there on a daily basis. It's updated, Moira. Will I give it out to you now?
I'd love to hear it.
It's www, that's three W's.
Right.
.32.
Okay.
csm.info.
So it's www.32csm.info.
Yes.
Very good. And we'll make that available for people here. We'll make sure we keep telling folks about that if they want more information. And it's good to know that your website is updated, because there's certainly a lot going on right
about now. Is that 32 the numbers or the spelled out?
Sorry?
Is that 32?
No, 32. Just 3-2.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Now, the other point before on that issue of the UN is important. The sections that we lodged the actions against the British and the Dublin government are the correct ones. They're there for citizens of any country to use in a certain situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
The first one was the Human Rights Declaration, and that's all appropriately up in documentation. You know, it's very extensive legal talk, so you'd have to look at that or download it.
Right.
And we're, as you mentioned, the Palestinians there and people throughout the world, we would be in league with them in terms of the rights of the people at the United Nations. We all know it's a big bureaucracy and all that, but all down to Irish history, the Irish people's leadership had to lodge in whatever international situation was developing at the time.
Right, of course. Well, now, is there going to be any movement on the petition to the UN, or is that, has that been recognised, or where does that go now?
Well, the petition that is, it's formally lodged.
Uh-huh.
The Dublin government, now we lodged our one in advance of the referendum here.
Right.
Stating that the Dublin government were going to hold a referendum to drop the territorial claim to the nation, and this will be illegal under the various acts when under occupation and not allowed to change the territorial base and all of that.
Right.
Now, and the Dublin government have since then lodged the Good Friday at the UN.
Right.
So the point is, you now have a situation where the sovereignty movement is challenging what they've done at the UN, and the UN has had that document lodged by the Dublin and British government, right?
Right.
So it's in the context of building support for one side or the other there that strength of each case will come to focus.
I see. So that's an ongoing thing then?
Oh, yes, yes.
Okay.
And we were then in Geneva. We lodged it for 3 weeks there. We were in the UN over there. We spoke at it and all. We lodged the violations of human rights against the Dublin and British government, whatever, you know, they're extensive as well.
Right.
That's all up on the internet as well.
Okay, and now the papers for Geneva, that's the European Court of Human Rights?
No, that's the UN. The United Nations office in Geneva is the human rights section
The
UN.
Okay, because I know that the European Court of Human Rights has weighed in on British actions in the north as well.
Oh, yes. The European Court of Human Rights has ruled against them several times.
Right.
Yes. But you see, ever since the end of World War II, any national claim a nation has, right, must be lodged with the UN.
So,
now, the Dublin government never lodged with the UN when they joined it, the territorial dispute over the north. And there was a secret protocol not to raise it, and the British wouldn't object to them joining.
Right, I get it. Okay.
Right.
So now you're hoping that this can be addressed because it never was.
Well, I'm speaking as an Irish man who's standing behind the claim as lodged by the sovereignty movement and not by the Good Friday gang.
Right. Okay, well, Joe, you've certainly been able to give us a lot of information. I really appreciate the time you were able to spend with us this morning.
I enjoyed it, and I appreciate speaking to you.
It's my pleasure, and I hope we get a chance to talk to you again in the future.
You will indeed, yes. Anytime you want, get in touch, and we'll be here to, you know, for interviews or whatever you want done.
That would be great, you know. Joe. You know, one last thing I did want to ask you about briefly before I let you go is I understand that there was a bit of a skirmish between Gerry Adams and the sister of a friend of ours. We've spoken on Radio Free Ireland several times with Marion Price.
Yes.
And I understand that Gerry has been lashing out at her sister Dolores recently. Maybe you'd have a word or two to say about that.
Well, I'll put it this way. Her statement in the paper was, Dolores Price's statement was, that she was not unhappy with the issue of people whose bodies were buried and whereabouts unknown, and the denial that these men were or were not executed by the IRA, some of them now, and she made the point that her officer commanding her while she was in the IRA was Gerry Adams.
Right.
So, Adams, as you know, was always denied he was in the IRA, and he's come out and made that point that he wasn't in the IRA, and he denies all she said.
Right.
Now, the point is, of course, you can see where a person could easily become traumatized when they see a person going back on the principle of all that they led young people to do and then deny it.
Yeah,
So, I mean, that's there. Again, it's probably something that will develop further down.
Uh-huh. You know?
But I will say this much about it all. Jackie Hughes was in a similar frame of mind with Adams.
Right.
And I think you're going to see similar things in that book about him.
Yes, well, I'm certainly looking forward to cracking that one open.
Yeah.
And I think it's pretty disgraceful that Adams was trying to infer that Dolores, you know, maybe some of her criticism of Sinn Féin came out of the fact that she was troubled with PTSD as a result of her years of service to the Irish Republican Army. And she has indeed admitted that, you know, being force-fed while in jail in Britain and other things that she'd experienced during the armed struggle had caused her to have PTSD. But it sounded to me like Adams was trying to say that on account of that, that her political opinions really had no, you know, you couldn't justify her political opinions because she was a troubled woman. And I found that to be just really low and disgraceful. And I have to wonder how low Sinn Féin is going to sink when attacking its own, you know, ex-supporters who have become disillusioned. And, you know, really, is there no depth to which they will not plumb in order to, you know,
well, there is
make the people that dissent with them seem less authoritative.
Well, there isn't actually, and in line with that, I make the point to you. We put a document before the British, the Unionists, the Irish government, and Sinn Féin, for to give us an answer to how it is Irish sovereignty can be retained or regained under what they've done on the Good Friday.
Uh-huh.
And they have not been able to answer it.
No, you wouldn't, would you?
On one occasion, they said it was lost, and we said we don't mind a reprint. And the point is, Adams is an expert at using his popularity to blacken a person's opinion.
Right.
If you follow.
Yes. Well, it certainly seems like he learned from the people who used it against him.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. And
it's certainly a tragedy, as you say, that there is this split, again, in Irish politics. But certainly this has always been the case. As you said earlier, there's always been attempts to divide and conquer Irish republicanism. It doesn't look like this one's going to be any more successful than the other ones.
But no, but, I mean, if you look at the whole history of the whole of Europe, from Germany to England up to the Balkans and all,
uh-huh.
You have the same type of split in every country. Italy and all.
Right.
Right?
Right, right.
But we don't have a national parliament to argue them out in.
Mm-hmm.
You follow?
Yeah.
Like, the point is, we'd been able to, if we had the British out of our country, off the island, we'd have all aspects of politics debating in parliament.
Right.
Without that, we have a war situation.
Right, understood. Okay, Joe, well, we'll certainly keep an eye on things, and thanks again.
Thank you, Myra. And I appreciate all.
And give us that website one more time.
Right, one second.
I think it was www.
One second
now. Okay.
Oh, I think I have it here.
Okay.
I wrote it down. 32CSM.
Dot info.
Info.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay, Mr. Dillon, thanks very much. And
well, I'm off now to wet the shamrock.
All right, you do the same. Be careful now.
Thank you very much. Slán.
Slán. And that was Joe Dillon calling from just outside of Dublin, speaking to us about the ongoing struggle for Irish freedom and independence, which seems like it's just as dirty
keeps
as it
on,
ever was.
Keeps on keeping on, doesn't it?
Aye. Well, you know, I think at least people are starting to get wise to the different sets of tricks that they use. You know, they don't go over quite so easily as they used to. Of course, one of the problems, though, and a problem that I see as growing, is the further consolidation of media. You know, there are fewer and fewer outlets from which you can get the news. And, of course, a lot of them are all tied up with political and corporate mainstream, you know, whoever is running things, what's their view of it? That's the view that most people are going to get.
Mr. Murdoch.
I and others. And certainly I'm sure that Mr. Adams will be all over the TV tonight receiving a bowl of shamrocks or giving a bowl of shamrocks to the Obamas and being heralded at the White House. But, you know, here at KBOO, we try to burrow beneath the surface of these pretty shiny pictures and get at what the truth really is. And the sad truth of it is that there is growing dissent against Sinn Féin and against the direction that Adams has brought them in the 10 years since the Good Friday Agreement. It was just on the 4th of March that they, or the 9th of March, I believe, that they voted to devolve the powers over police and the courts back to Stormont Castle, which is the seat of government in the north of Ireland. This way the police and the courts would be administered by the people elected by the people of the north of Ireland and would actually be part of a representative government. Sounds wonderful, you know. It sounds like something that all good Irish Republicans could be thrilled about. But sadly, when you look at the agreements as written, you see that most of them have holes big enough to drive an armed, you know, tank truck through. So this is why there is still dissent. This is why there was a 250-pound car bomb driven through the gates of the Newry Courthouse 2 weeks ago. And this is why MI6 and MI5 are continuing to recruit and pressurize and harass people into becoming informers to the point where Seamus McGreevy took his own life several weeks ago, one of the founding members of the 32-county sovereignty movement. So, you know, way back when I started this show, I was a great supporter of Sinn Féin. They were also at the time banned from the United States as a terrorist organization. Since that time, apparently they've jumped through enough hoops to be welcomed into the bosom of mainstream British government and U.S. government. And yet another group has risen up in the vacuum to take Sinn Féin's place as a dissident Republican organization. So there you have it. It looks like there's still a reason to be reporting on Irish politics here in the Pacific Northwest, and we will keep at it until the British finally leave. That's our promise to you here at KBOO. And we're going to take a wee break and play some more tunes and come back and maybe talk a little bit more about the news. You know, there's been a lot going on with the Shell to Sea campaign, and also they want to build another highway through another Irish historical site, Newgrange this time. So we'll talk a little bit more about that when we get back.
And we got that new CD by the Chieftains.
Yes, indeed.
The
San Patricios.
San Patricios, who we have talked about many times on this show, and it's getting more recognition. This is a sort of a the Chieftains working with Ry Cooter and a bunch of other singers, Mexican singers.
A number of Mexican bands.
Yeah,
aye.
So it's sort of like Mexican Irish music here.
Sounds great to me.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful combination.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, right now we're going to take a break and listen to another local band, because I figure as long as the town is celebrating Patrick's Day, we might as well play a wee bit of a tribute to some of the wonderful bands that make Portland such a great place to hear Irish music. Before we get to that, I just want to make a wee short statement, like I do every year, about my own personal feelings about St. Patrick's Day. Now, it's ultimately flattering that Patrick's Day is such a big holiday in the United States, and I'm always chuffed every year that so many people go out of their way to celebrate their Irish heritage, or their desire to at least wish they were part Irish. You know, you see the buttons, unofficial Irishman, that kind of thing, you know, and they say everyone's Irish on St. Patrick's Day. And these are all really lovely kind of nods to the great influence that Irish culture has had on the United States. I think they're the second biggest ethnic group as counted in America, at least amongst people who aren't indigenous to the United States. The biggest group being German Americans. followed closely there by the Irish Americans, one of the largest ethnic groups here in this country. And, you know, certainly St. Patrick's Day parades are some of the biggest events in some of the cities they take place in. We have the Shamrock Run here, and then we have the Big Kells event. And we have a number of Irish parades around the city. And these are all really lovely and a great nod to the different cultures that make up the melting pot of America. Having said that, however, I know a lot of Americans don't recognize that leprechauns were originally constructed as sort of an Aunt Jemima kind of a thing. It was a racist construct meant to make fun of the Irish. So, you know, maybe don't be so quick to put on your leprechaun costumes on St. Patrick's Day. And as for myself, as an Irish Republican, I have to say that I've never celebrated Patrick's Day as a Catholic holiday. You know, St. Patrick, of course, is famous for having brought Roman Catholicism to Ireland. Ireland already was, it was mostly a pagan country before that, but it did have monasteries. It did have somewhat of a Catholic culture in different areas, but this was called Celtic Catholicism and was a great deal more loosely structured than the Roman Catholic Church with the Vatican and the Pope as its head. Now, back in the 3rd century, the Vatican was concerned about this Celtic Catholicism. They wanted to bring the Irish back under Roman rule. Well, St. Patrick had been picked up as a young boy by an Irish raiding party in Britain. His father was a Roman functionary born and raised in Britain and working for the Roman government in Britain. And Patrick was seized by this Irish raiding party, brought back to Ireland, and set to be kind of an indentured servant, a slave, but not a slave the way we think of it in modern times. But he was indeed set out to be a domestic worker and worked in the fields tending the sheep and like that for a number of years, learned the language, learned the culture, and then as a young man, after a couple of years, he was able to make his way back to Britain, where he was received back into the bosom of his family and went to school within the Roman Catholic Church and became somewhat of a high-level figure within the Vatican hierarchy. So when they were wondering what they were going to do about these, you know, kind of outlandish Celtic Catholics that were a bit wild, Patrick volunteered, since he was familiar with the culture and the language, to go back to Ireland and bring Roman Catholicism to that country. And, well, he did, and is credited to this day with being the founder of the Roman Catholic Church in Ireland. Now, to my way of thinking, that is nothing to celebrate. And I usually wear black on this day. Today I'm actually wearing brown. But the reason for that is because it's been my strong opinion all of my life that the coming of Catholicism was not anything to celebrate in Ireland.
Like the MI5 of his time.
Thank you. That's rather a very good analogy. You know, it must be remembered that Ireland had a long matrilineal tradition, that women were equals, both legally and economically. They could be warriors, they could be clan chiefs, they could be doctors, they could be whatever they liked. They could own property and were recognized as equals under law. The coming of the Catholic Church changed all of that, changed a lot of things in Ireland. And indeed, as Joe Dillon was talking about earlier, the partition of Ireland set up a sectarian state, as the Catholic Church is still recognized as being a part of the Irish government and indeed stands in authority over the Irish education system to this day. Is in the hands of the Catholic Church, the very same Catholic Church, it might be noted, that is right now undergoing such scandals that the Archbishop of Ireland is being pressured to step down because he was part of a cover-up of widespread paedophilia. Apparently at the time back in the 50s, this particular priest knew about child abuse, and instead of bringing the perpetrators to justice, he had the kids take a vow of silence. an oath of silence to protect their abusers.
Wow.
And now the guy is the Archbishop of all Ireland. So I want to know why these people aren't in jail. And the Catholic Church has some pretty heavy explaining to do on its legacy of abuse of children and of women and of all of its parishioners. So it is for this reason, amongst many more, that I do not respect the day as a Catholic holiday. I respect it as a recognition of Irish culture. And in that way, I think it's, you know, it's great.
In all its forms.
Right. If you want to go out and celebrate, that's great, you know. However, St. Patrick's Day as a reason to celebrate, I just don't know, you know. The coming of the Catholic Church caused a lot of unforeseen problems in Ireland that we're still dealing with to this day. So that's my little yearly lecture.
Maybe you should celebrate the San Patricios.
Let's do that instead. Okay. Mm-hmm. First, we're going to hear from Coolanti. Then we're going to come back and play a little bit of Chieftains with our remaining 47 minutes. Or 27? Whatever, 15. Okay.
Not many.
Yes, not many, so I'll shut up and play some music. Here's Coolanti for you. little bit of local colour for you. That was Coulon Tea from their 1999 release. My gosh. Carrie Novotny and the lads, and you can be sure to hear them somewhere around the area this week and this weekend. I'm sure that they'll be playing over at Kells, as well as a number of other places. Don't forget to check out the Tillicum. That's out on Southwest Beaverton Hillsdale Highway. It's under new management from Marie Gallagher from Waterford. And sounds like there's going to be some authentic music starting there at noon today. Also got handed some information about Professor Francis Boyle, a professor of international law at the University of Illinois in Champaign, is raising the question, was the Great Famine in Ireland genocide by Britain?
Well, he's a well-known scholar in international law.
Is he?
Yes, he is. Yes, definitely.
So it looks like he's taken up this same question that Joe Dillon was talking about earlier with us, raising the idea that what Britain did to Ireland during the famine was actually a Holocaust. So very interesting, and I'm glad to see people taking that story back up. Also want to tell people that this Friday on Radio Free Ireland, I will be having as my guest local hero, Dave Rovics. And Dave, of course, is a wonderful lefty songwriter. He's written some great tunes, including Who Would Jesus Bomb? And he also has a tune about the St. Patrick's Battalion that we'll hope to get to on Friday. Dave was in County Mayo recently communing with the Shelter Sea folks. So do be sure to tune it in here on Friday at 11 a.m. and we'll be talking a little bit more about that. But right now we're going to try to get to some music from the Chieftains.
Well, this is a CD they did with Ry Cooter and a whole lot of Mexican musicians, Los Folkloristas, Carlos Nunez, and also Linda Ronstadt, who is part Mexican. And so this, I think the first one we'll do is called Sailing to Mexico.
All right, here's the Chieftains' newest one, the San Patricio.
This just came out a couple days ago.
Very cool. Let's get that going. You're listening to a special St. Patrick's Day program here on KBOO. My name is Maura Cullen. I was joined this morning by my good friend and favorite co-host, Per Fagering. whom I really enjoy being back behind the mic with.
Hey, he's like old time.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah, okay.
And let's see, that last tune was,
that was
from
Sailing
the
to Mexico.
Mm-hmm. And I guess we have enough time to maybe play another tune or two.
Yeah.
I did just get a call from one of our listeners. Actually, I've received several calls this morning. Thanks everyone who tried to call in. And one of our listeners just wanted to share with us that he heard a piece about Irish women the other day, and there was a quote from Sinead O'Connor, and it went something like this: if Jesus was around today, he'd burn down the Vatican, and I would help him. So I just thought, you know, good old Sinead, she's always good for
every now and then she comes up with some really...
something to drive the mainstream crazy.
Yes, that's right.
So on that note, we're going to listen to another tune by the Chieftains.
Well, let's see what we got time for here. We could do the finale, or we could do the... why don't we do the finale? Then we'll just kind of wrap things up.
That'd be great. Okay.
That's number 19 on the thing.
All right.
This has sort of got everybody in it.
Sounds like fun. Here we go.
White flag flying within this green command. We are the San Patricios. We have but one demand: to see the Yankees safely home across the Rio Grande. Churubusco, we made our final stand. No court of justice did we have in the land of Uncle Sam. As traitors and deserters all, we would be shot or hanged, far from the green, green Chinook shore, across the Rio Grande.
And that was Liam Neeson with the Chieftains on their brand new record, the San Patricios. I'm Maura Cullen. I'm joined with Per Fothering.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a real pleasure spending the last 2 hours with you. And do make sure you tune in on Friday to Radio Free Ireland. We're going to have Dave Rovix reporting on the Shell to Sea campaign. We're also hoping to get in touch with a guy who was trying to call in today from Shannon Watch. And these are the guys who have been keeping an eye on the illegal CIA flights out of Shannon Airport.
Mm-hmm.
We'll also have a report on the highway they're trying to build through Newgrange. On lots of other stuff. If you want to comment or criticize today's program, we'd love to hear from you at radiofreeireland@irishnation.com. That's radiofreeireland, all one word, at irishnation.com.
And then tomorrow I'll be doing Fight the Empire, and my guests will be Dr. David Sabo. Now, he's a brother of Marine Colonel Jim Sabo, who died very mysteriously in the early 90s. He was at El Toro Air Base, and apparently some people allege that he was taken out because he knew about drug running. This was when the CIA was running drugs in from Nicaragua, part of the whole Iran-Contra deal.
Yeah.
Right, so we'll be talking with Dr. David Sabo. This is a story that won't go away.
Very good.
I mean, it's so we'll. And then on April 1st, the guest will be William Pepper, who wrote the book Act of State, all about the assassination of Martin Luther King.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and that's going to be on Fight the Empire, one of my favorite shows here on KABU. And that's tomorrow at
9:30.
At 9:30.
Right after Teresa.
And then on Friday, Radio Free Ireland at 11 a.m. Let's see. I think that's it for us then today. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Have a good time out there today. And be careful. Yeah. And don't drink any green beer.
Don't drink green beer, no. Don't step in green puddles.
Good morning, everyone. See you Friday.